and gentlemen, your attention, please.
Well, well, here we are.
I want to congratulate you for being on time.
Synchronize your watches.
I don't know how to do that.
I don't wear a watch.
I thought I was losing my mind. What the heck? Is that Pete?
Here's Pete McMurray on 720 WGN.
Wait for it. Wait for it. And the Lions just got a field goal. Boy, the Bears are just horrendous. This is terrible. 6-0 now at Soldier Field. 4 drives, 4 punts, 25 yards. Are you kidding me? Wow. The Bears look terrible. What happened to our team? This is so upsetting. Boy, I went in and saw OB. I like to come in and watch the game with Hamp and OB for about 15, 20 minutes. OB was steaming, man. I just shook his hand and walked out. There's no way. Curtis, have you seen him? Curtis behind the glass. Curtis Cook behind the glass.
Oh, yes.
OB is wound up.
Yeah, last week when we left, Pete, I was staying back doing some post-production stuff, and we have the cameras on. Mm-hmm. And you could just see the veins popping out of OB's
steam
head.
Coming
steam
out of his melon.
He was pissed.
What's this backup quarterback from Detroit? Matthew Stafford. The Bears are favored by 7.5 today. It went from 2.5 to 7, or 7.5, before the game because Matthew Stafford's out, and they're losing 6-0 with 4:40 left in the first half. So frustrating. We're going to check in with Kevin Powell from Soldier Field in just a second. Coming up on today's show, Blues Traveler is coming to town on Thursday. We'll talk to John Popper, lead singer, lead harmonica player at 2:35 today. If you're headed downtown during the Christmas season, there is a 55-foot spruce that will be on display in Millennium Park. We'll talk to the family who donated that Christmas tree at 2:05. But first, it's time for our first guest. Chicago's top cop called it quits this week.
The victims of gun violence are often left physically or psychologically broken. So reducing these shootings in the city that I love has been one of the greatest accomplishments of my career. And it's with that in mind that I want to announce my retirement today. It's time for someone else to pin these 4 stars to their shoulders. These stars can sometimes feel like you're carrying the weight of the world.
This is his very first one-on-one interview since announcing his retirement. Eddie Johnson, retiring as Chicago Police Superintendent, and he joins us now. Eddie, thanks for coming on with me. It's been a pretty emotional last few days for you.
Yeah, it is, Pete. Thanks for having me today. But, you know, everything changes, and it's just that time for me.
You know, Chicago can't keep secrets. This has been going on for a week. It's the worst-kept secret in Chicago.
Agreed.
What did you think about that? You knew that you were going to announce at the end of the week, and people were speculating, front page of the newspapers, all over the news.
Yeah, I tell you, it was, I knew I was going to do it, and it was a little frustrating, I won't kid you, because, you know, you just want to do something like that and go out on your own terms, you know, and when it started leaking out, it was a bit frustrating, I will admit that.
Well, people speculate. They're questioning whether it's because of the investigation about when you fell asleep in your squad car. They're questioning your health. Why?
Yeah.
Why now?
Because, you know what, I'll tell you this, Pete. So at the police memorial in September, I had some conversations with the widows of what 3 of the officers that got killed last year, Samuel Jimenez, Conrad Gary, and Eduardo Marmoleo. And after I talked to them, you know, I was talking to them, and I saw the pride because we were honoring their husbands, but I also saw the pain in their faces. And I tell you, I know that's difficult for them, but just as difficult for me being the head of the department. So when I sat down before the program, Mayor Lightfoot was sitting next to me, and I whispered to her, you know, we got to start talking about an end date for me because I'm getting there. And then, of course, you know, we took the trip to London following the Bears, and that was really the first time I had a vacation since I've been superintendent.
Really?
And I got to be honest, Pete, I felt like a normal person again, and I saw how much my family had missed having quality time like that, you know, as a family.
Right.
And so that pretty much did it. So people can speculate, and that's fine. I'm okay with that. But, you know, at some point you have to say, you know, enough.
Eddie, you have pictures of the fallen police officers under your watch in your office at work, and you look at them every single day. Why do you do that?
Just to remind me of the responsibility I have as the police superintendent to do everything in my power to give these officers out in the field the resources that they need so that that won't occur again. You know, as a police chief, I got to be honest, Pete. I'm sure all over the country chiefs can attest to this, but you constantly think about them and you wonder, what could you have done to possibly prevent that tragedy from happening? You know, and the answer, you may never find an answer, and it might be nothing, but at the same time, you still feel horrible, you know, when it comes under your watch. So
right.
I keep them as constant reminders to keep me grounded and to motivate me to continue to do more.
We're talking with Eddie Johnson, retiring as Chicago Police Superintendent. I can't imagine the stress you bring home every single night, be it a police officer being shot, you're worried about the men and women working in your department. Halloween, we had a 7-year-old girl that got shot. You went to the hospital. How do you handle that?
Well, you know what? It's something that you have to come to grips with because, unfortunately, that's part of the job. But I tell you, at night when I get home, I got a 10-year-old here who kind of takes all of that off my mind because he's just a 10-year-old, so he doesn't understand all of that.
Right.
He just wants to do what 10-year-olds do, you know, and that really does help take my mind off of it.
2 years ago, you had major surgery. You had a kidney transplant. How's your health?
I'm great. You know, as you know, I had the blood clot issue earlier in the summer.
Right.
But overall, I'm in a really good place. So I can't complain. You know, I have to make sure I continue to do the things that the doctors want me to do. But other than that, I feel wonderful and I appreciate you asking.
We looked at the average tenure of a Chicago police chief and it's right around 3.5 years. So you're right in that wheelhouse.
Yep. Because, you know, the pressures that come with it, it's enormous. It really is. And I'm right there, you know, just short of 4 years. So I think that's enough. You know, it's time for someone else to come in with some fresh ideas and take a different view of what we're doing. But the point is, Pete, you know, we've gone a long way to bring the community back to their police department. And that is a lot of the reason we were able to bring those guys in custody so quickly with the 7-year-old, because the Latino community over there really reached out and gave us some tips and clues, and you can't do that unless you have that trust. So we just have to continue that momentum.
What changed when you took over? How did you gain the trust of the community again?
Well, you know, going out there and just talking to them and listening to them. I think one of the best things I did in retrospect was bringing a lot of our most vocal critics up to my office and just listening to their concerns. You know, so you have to listen to people, go out there with them, and not be afraid to get tough questions, because you're going to get that.
Right.
Everybody is not going to agree with everything that you do, but you can't be afraid of it. So I think being approachable like I was went a long way to bring the community, especially the Black and Hispanic community, back to the police department.
We've talked about that 100 times, Eddie. People just want to be heard, especially from the Chicago Police Department.
That's it. That's it. You know, I tell you this, Pete, from the time I was a sergeant, I realized that a lot of times, you know, they may know you cannot do everything they want you to do, but they appreciate you taking the time to listen to them. And sometimes, believe it or not, you can get those things done. So you have to continuously have that dialogue with them.
When you look back at your career, Eddie, the high highs and the low lows, what has been your biggest accomplishments over the past 3.5 years? And tell me some of the things that still bother you that you couldn't get done.
So in terms of the biggest accomplishments, I think bringing the community back together with the police department. We've made a lot of gains in our community relationship area. It's not where we want it to be, but it's certainly a lot better than it was. And I'm extremely proud of that. I'm also extremely proud of we were able to provide police officers the training and the coaching that they needed in terms of use of force. You know, we put that use of force policy out 2 times for public comment.
Right.
So the public and the police officers were able to craft that use of force policy. And as a result of that, in highlighting the sanctity of life and de-escalation, 2011, we had 91 police-involved shootings at this same time frame of that year. This year, we've only had 16. That's a phenomenal drop in terms of use of force. So I'm really proud of that. But one of the things I wish I could have finished that I won't be able to is I wish I could have brought the department entirely through the consent decree. Because I believe at the end of the day, that consent decree is going to make us a better department. So I wish I would have had time. But, of course, that's going to be another 4 or 5 years out at the minimum before we get done with that.
Interim Police Chief Charlie Beck. Tell me about Charlie.
Charlie is a great guy. You know, in 2016, we were in the midst of one of the most violent years we had seen in decades. And he was one of the first police chiefs from around the country to reach out to me to offer any advice, any knowledge, any resources that we might need in Chicago to help us turn it around. So he's probably one of three police chiefs, me included, that would loan a chief of staff to another department. And he loaned his chief of staff to us. And the end result of that was when we created the Strategic Decision Support Centers. So he understands what it takes to bring down crime. He understands what it takes to mend fences in the community, because let's face it, L.A. was in a consent decree, I think, for about 12 or 13 years.
Mm-hmm.
He was a chief for 8 years, and you know, we don't come into these jobs knowing how to do it. We have to learn it. You know, so I appreciate his friendship. I appreciate the fact that he loaned us his chief of staff, because now in Inglewood, one of the first districts we piloted that room, their violent crime year-to-date compared to when we started in 2016 is down 52%.
Wow.
And I never thought I'd see that. And citywide, our violent crime is down 38% from 2016. So we've made a lot of progress, and he certainly played a part in that, and I'm grateful to him for that.
I thought Charlie handled himself very well at the press conference when he said he was from L.A., doesn't know all the Chicago City streets, but will learn from people around him. Great answer.
Yep, absolutely, because you have to recognize the things that you don't know and be willing to acknowledge them, because that's the only way you're going to learn. So he's not coming in here pretending like he knows Chicago.
Right.
You know, so I'm sure he'll do a good job in getting us through the transition from me to that next person.
And what's the one piece of advice that you're going to give Charlie Beck?
What I would tell him is to keep that dialogue going with the minority community and be as transparent as he can.
Eddie, you're the best. You've been so gracious to come on since you took over. Every single time I've asked, you've come on, and I hope we see you before you finish out before the end of the year, because it's been a while since you've been in studio.
Yep. Oh, yeah, Pete. You'll see me, so I promise I'll come see you before I leave.
You're the best. That is Eddie Johnson, everybody, retiring as Chicago Police Superintendent at the end of the year. Thank you, Eddie.
Thanks, man.
Take care. Thanks again to Eddie Johnson. I met Eddie right after... He took his position, and he's been so gracious to us over the years. And on Thursday, I sent a text, and he's like, wait a few days, and we'll come on with you on Sunday. I tried to get him on Thursday night when I was here at WGN. He's like, I just need to decompress. But very nice of him to do his very first one-on-one interview right here at 720 WGN. By the way, we mentioned that the average span for a superintendent here in Chicago, 3.5 years. Eddie was 3.5, 4 years. Eddie was 3.5 years. Gary McCarthy was 4 years, 6 months, 4.5 years. Jody Weiss was 3 years. Let's see here. Phil Klein was 3.5 years. Terry Hillard was 5 years. So those are your last few right there. So the average span about 3.5, 4 years. So this is about time for him to go. I can't imagine the pressure and just bringing your job home. Think about what you do for a living. I mean, in radio, first of all, it's a joke, okay? I mean, I'll come home and say, oh, man, wow, what a show. I was so stressed out. Stressed out for what? I mean, I'll be the first to admit working in media is just a cakewalk. But I can't imagine being in...
Well, but with Eddie, everywhere you go, your job's with you. You're on the news.
Always. And people want to bring you their problems, too.
Yeah.
But being a police officer in this city, wow.
It's rough stuff.
First responder in this city, just crazy. But that was awesome. All right, out of the corner of my eye, while I was talking to Eddie, we have five monitors in the studio, and two have the Bear game on. The Bears are winning? Are they winning?
When was the last time they had a lead at halftime?
I can't believe it.
So me either.
They couldn't score the entire first half, and they scored with, what, 30 seconds left? What happened?
A minute left, yeah. Trubisky on a slant route pass to the tight end. I believe it was Adam Shaheen or Ben
Adam
Bronker.
Shaheen caught a pass?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. We're still pathetic. So did they just march down the field? Did I miss something?
A little bit, yeah. It was 66-yard drive. 7 of 8 was Trubisky.
Okay.
Missed pass on a Tariq Cohen kind of screen, but hey, they moved the ball a little bit.
Now, hold on a second. Detroit has their backup quarterback, and they're 3-5, right?
Correct.
Okay. They stink. I'm sorry, they're 3-4-1. Yeah, because they had a tie at the beginning of the season. They're 3-4-1. Detroit's got a bad team, guys, so let's not get too excited. We should be up by at least 2 or 3 touchdowns. Hamp and OB with Kaz coming up at 3 o'clock. OB was worked up. We'll talk to John Popper sometime in the 2 o'clock hour.
All I'm telling you is this. This team, I'd like to buy them for what they're worth and sell them for what they think they're worth. They all think they're so great. Matt Nagy, you better wake up.
Bear down, bear down, bear down, bear down.
3 o'clock. Hamp and OB. Well, the Bears are now winning 7-6 at halftime. Let's go live to Soldier Field and talk to Kevin Powell. I can't believe it. The first half, they stunk it up, and then they take the lead right before half, Kev.
Yeah, by the way, that Hamp line is an all-timer. Maybe the best of the season from Hamp. But, look, first quarter was disastrous. It was very tough to watch, Pete. 19 total yards, absolutely nothing going on the offensive side of the ball. Yep, 19 yards. But somehow, some way, this team is winning at half, Pete. They are up 7-6, 18-yard touchdown pass to Ben Browniker. Which, you know, I've been saying that Mitch Trubisky looked composed in that last drive that got them 7 points. And I've sort of been saying all year, get him in an up-tempo offense. Do something to bring life to this offense because it has been stale, boring, predictable. Everything you can think of has been Matt Nagy's play calling. I don't even believe it's got the lack of trust. You got to figure it's factored in there for Matt Nagy and his play calling because it's just night and day from what we saw from this offense last year, which was pretty good last year. I mean, they had some ups and downs and some clunkers throughout the season, and Mitch Trubisky had enough bad moments to keep you skeptical about him as a quarterback. But,
right.
You know, that last drive, it was exactly what I think a lot of people wanted to see, just something refreshing. Do something to inject some life into the offense, and they did. It was a hurry-up offense. It was up-tempo. Mitch Trubisky was moving a little bit. He did miss a wide-open Allen Robinson on a first down play, ended up checking down at Tariq Cohen. There was in the press box, everyone was kind of like, it was an audible gasp from the press box because I don't know if you guys could see that on TV, but Allen Robinson was wide open in the end zone. Now it ended at 7 points, right? So I'm not trying to kind of cherry pick it here, but look, Trubisky, to his credit, did not look good the first quarter, but he was composed there going into the half, and he got them into a position to take the lead, and he made a great throw to Ben Browniker. So somehow, Pete, there is life to this game, and there is life to this season. Somehow, some way.
Well, Kev, break it down for me, because we're kind of half-watching. We're doing the show here. Are we running the ball? How many rush yards do we have?
I don't have it in front of me, Pete, but not a whole lot. The running game has basically been non-existent, and they continue to feed the ball to David Montgomery, but just nothing is happening on the ground game. We saw it work a couple weeks ago when they really committed to the run and everybody was screaming and hollering about putting in the I formation. Matt Nagy said they didn't even have some of those plays or those formations even in the playbook in camp. But look, at some point, you know, what I've been saying is Matt Nagy has to game plan for the team he has, not the team he wants.
Right.
This is not the team anybody thought we were going to see this year. Just about everybody had them winning a lot of games. We thought the offense could take some big steps forward after showing glimpses of it last year that gave you hope to sort of, wow, is this an innovative offense? We've never seen anything like this for the Chicago Bears team. You know, I've kind of been half joking this whole season. I'm like, this is, they're celebrating the 100th year. I'm like, well, this is basically a perfect way to celebrate the 100 years of the Chicago Bears. Good defense and horrible offense.
Right,
doesn't that sum up the 100 years of the Bears team? That's like everything we see. So I think last year we saw enough to give you some promise and some hope, and it just hasn't worked out this year. And I don't think anybody was anticipating this level of atrociousness from the Bears offense. But, you know, I was not expecting to see it. But look, They found a way. The defense, and look, I can't get on the defense this year. I mean, they've been, they're top 10 in multiple categories. Mm-hmm. Every single series before the defense this year, Pete, has felt like a must stop. Like, they have to get a stop. That puts a lot of pressure on the defense. They're facing a backup quarterback in Jeff Driskel. Who? Exactly. Nobody knows who Jeff Driskel is. For a while there, it looked like Jeff Driskel was going to beat the Chicago Bears, but he hasn't been very good. He hasn't been awful. He's about what you'd expect from a backup quarterback. Matthew Stafford of the Lions, a late scratch. He's apparently, according to some reports, has broken bones in his back. So,
what?
So Stafford was a late scratch this morning. We found out about it. So the Bears are facing a backup quarterback at home against just a mediocre Lions team. There's no excuses here. The Bears are better than
terrible.
The Lions, and they have to win this game.
Kev, we look absolutely terrible until that final drive. 26 rushing yards, by the way. Curtis just told me in my ear. 26 rushing yards. We're talking to Kevin Powell from Soldier Field. Danny Trevathan, what happened to him? He went out in the first half, and they said he's got a major arm injury.
Yeah, if you're a little wheezy when it comes to this stuff, don't look it up on Twitter. But he basically, he's listed as questionable return, which is surprising because if you see the video, it's a gruesome-looking injury. He basically was tackling the backup quarterback in Jeff Driskel, and as they were falling, he tried to brace with his left arm, and the elbow went the direction, Pete, that the elbow is not supposed to go.
Oh, boy.
So Trevathan, questionable return. When I saw that, I was surprising because when you see the injury, you're like, well, is the season over? It looks that bad. So Trevathan out for now. I would be surprised if he does come back into this game. But here we stand, 7-6, Pete. If you want to keep the season alive, you have to win this game. If there is any hope moving forward, the final, second half of the season. But, Mitch Trubisky, really bad in the first quarter. There was a switch on the offensive line, Pete. They moved Cody Whitehair back to center and James Daniels to left guard. That's where both of those guys played last season, and for whatever reason, the Bears decided to switch them this season. Now they've switched them back. Do keep an eye on Cody Whitehair, who's been sloppy with his snaps when Trubisky's in the shotgun. A lot of the balls haven't even gotten really off the ground, so Trubisky's had to bend down and pick the ball. So it's something to keep an eye on is Cody Whitehair and James Daniels in the second half as well, because the offensive line has not been good, Pete. There just really is nothing going on the running game, and a lot of it has to do with the offensive line. It's been the story all season. They get no push at the line, and there's really no holes for anybody to go. I love the way David Montgomery runs. I think he's a tough runner. He's tough to take down. But look, I mean, you can only do so much by yourself as a running back. At some point, you got to have some lanes. You got to have some big chunks and big gains. So I would say moving forward, it's how well does Mitch Trubisky play. Kind of just the same story all season. Can the defense keep them in this one, even if the offense is really bad? And I really, really want to see, Pete, what we saw from Trubisky in the last drive, where it's an up-tempo offense. Just something different. Get Mitch moving. Inject some life in this offense. So we'll see in the second half,
Kevin, here. Why wouldn't they look at that at halftime and say, okay, this is what worked. Let's keep running with it.
Right. Well, I completely agree, Pete. I mean, you got to, like, in some, those 2-minute hurry up offenses, you do have to keep in mind, like, the defense is very much playing a difference, in some ways, a little bit different, where they're making sure they don't get beat deep and that's a little bit more of a prevent defense. But it's like we're watching the same thing over and over week in and week out. Why wouldn't they try something up? Why wouldn't they try something different? Why wouldn't you try a hurry up offense or up tempo type offense, which does seem to fit into Mitch Trubisky's style more so than your typical standard pro offense.
I feel like Matt Nagy has a game plan and he just runs with it, and he doesn't really adjust during the game, but I feel like he just runs the ball to run the ball to get to a passing play.
Pete, everything you just said, I completely agree with. I think there's a level of stubbornness when it comes to his play calling, where, like, he's game planning and play calling for what he wants to see, not what he can actually. Not getting the actual production that he wants to see is changing his game plan. Like, it does feel like when he's running, he's just saying, like, okay, we have to run it because we have to run it.
Right.
It's just it's become predictable. It's out of his style, but it's the offense he has, so he has to start game planning for this offense. But I agree. It's the in-game adjustments or the lack of in-game adjustments that has just, like, completely blown my mind this season. Between Nagy and Trubisky, it just seemed like, you know, okay, the first half was miserable for, and not even just saying this game, just all season long. And then we're like, okay, well, maybe we'll make some adjustments at half, and maybe we'll see some life in the offense in the second half. And it's like, nope, they go back to the exact same stuff they were doing in the first half. This is the NFL. These teams have coaches and years of experience. Like, you have to adapt in game.
Right. Well, I don't know if you saw it, but the Bears just completed a 33-yard pass, and they're in Lions territory.
I heard cheering, Pete, so I missed it because of this interview.
I'll let you get back to the game, Kev. Appreciate it, man. Always the best.
All right, my man. Thanks, Pete. I appreciate it.
That is Kevin Powell. You can hear him afternoons on the Ro Khan Show with Anna DeVlantis. That's good stuff right there. Wow. I mean, the Bears, they're just not a good team. I mean, we are struggling right now. We're winning 7-6 in the third quarter, struggling to beat the Lions with a backup quarterback. 3-4-1 is the Lions' record. God, that's just pathetic. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to talk to a former Cub that's going to be playing ping pong in Chicago. I'll give you details next on 720 WGN.
They're singing, go, Cubs, go!
Player Ryan Dempster is the co-chair for the 7th annual Ping Pong Ball. The event takes place this Thursday at the St. Jane Hotel, and Ryan Dempster joins us now. How are you, brother?
Good, Pete. How you doing, man?
Can you play quarterback for us?
Yeah, I love that text you sent me. No, unfortunately, I can't.
Oh.
But, yeah, I understand everybody's frustrations, but we got to somehow rally behind him and lift him up instead of continuously beating him down. Hopefully he can turn it around and get back on the trajectory everybody was hoping for him.
Paint a picture for me of being a professional athlete here in Chicago, because these fans and media can turn on you in a second. They can love you one day and turn on you the next. And when your confidence is down and the entire city is making fun of you, I mean, that's got to be so hard as an athlete.
Yeah, 100%. I think, you know, we always do better with encouragement just in life in general. And, yeah, you've got to be pushed hard and be a realist and understand when you're not doing your job like you're supposed to be doing, you're going to have some criticism, especially in professional sports and the amount of money that these guys make. But, you know, and I'd always get the one from people who say, well, don't read the papers or whatever. It's like, yeah, but cool, I know the questions they're asking me.
Right.
So I know what they're talking about. We all know that as athletes. And it is a hard thing, and you have to just try and stay positive. And, you know, when you're out there going on a drive, or, you know, out there pitching on the mound, when I was pitching, the booze never helped. They're never like, oh, wait, I'm doing a bad job. Okay. I couldn't tell by the three homers I just gave up that inning, you know, so it all, positive reinforcement always helps.
Well, you went from starter to reliever to starter. When you were a reliever, man, people just laid into you. I mean, there were some days where we, of course, loved you, and some days where Ryan Dempster, he's lost it. He's got nothing left in the tank. How do you get past that?
Yeah, you just realize that ultimately all you can do is control that day. And it's the hardest thing to do, because when stuff starts snowballing downhill, you start to revert to those feelings inside, and then therefore you end up not being successful like you should be. And it's the fuel that kind of feeds itself, and that's the really hard part to get past. Stay positive, but
right,
the minute those negative thoughts creep in, all of a sudden bad stuff starts happening in your head. You're like, see, here we go again. And
yep,
to get out of it is really, really hard.
It's a head game, isn't it? You're inside your own head.
Oh, absolutely. Way more. Professional sports, sure, you got to be physically talented, but they're all physically talented. Look at them all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, professional athletes are that way. It's who's the best between the ears. The best quarterbacks are the ones who can slow things down and make it seem like it's in slow motion for everybody. And the ones that struggle are the ones that, you know, the game speeds up for them. And I think that's, you know, the same in baseball. The hitters that can get into the box in a big situation with the bases loaded, and it looks for them like it's slowing down. And some guys, it looks like it's speeding up. And then what happens is you punch out with the bases loaded instead of come up with a big hit.
Right. We're talking to Ryan Dempster. You have your big ping pong ball happening this Thursday at the St. Jane Hotel. Can you play ping pong?
Not bad. I got a table. So I like to spin it a little bit.
Can you play that?
Yeah, I enjoy it. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Well, it's all about the serve. How is your serve?
Not bad. That I could be a little bit better there, but just I like to keep it on my backhand. So if you're going to show up, Pete, and you want to play a game, on Thursday night. Okay. I throw it to my forehand for your best chance.
All right. I like that. I like it. I wanted to have you on today, number one, because we haven't talked in a while, and I love you. But number two, the Jackson Chance Foundation. I love this charity, and I want you to explain to everyone listening where the money goes.
Yeah, it's a really, really incredible thing that they do. So anytime a child is born and, you know, goes to Laurie Children's Hospital and is in the NICU, and you're a parent and you have to go there and you have to park, even though you're getting validated and, it's cheaper, it's still not cheap. And it's a big expense for families, something that's not covered by insurance and things that you can't get back. So the Jackson Chance Foundation makes sure that every parent gets a parking pass, so that while their child's in the NICU, they can come and go as they please. If they have to come at lunchtime or, after work or whatever it is, that they can go in and out and not have to take on this huge expense, which sometimes can cost up to $1,000 a month. And that's right. That's just really unrealistic for a lot of parents. That puts you in the hole in a big way when you're already going through something really, really tough emotionally and as a family. To have to take on that expense is huge. So the Jackson Chance Foundation does that, and it's just absolutely incredible.
You know what? I went through this with my brother. He's a leukemia survivor, and I remember going to Northwestern multiple times a day. Even if you get stamped, it's $11, $11. Three times a day, you're paying over $30, and if you do that 5 days a week, it adds up. You're absolutely right, and I applaud the people that came up with this idea. It's such a great charity.
Yeah, it is, and it's something that's extremely tangible. Sometimes when we give money to charity, there are costs that go with running a charity. We get that. The family that does this, they're amazing people, and they take all those expenses on themselves, and that's their contribution, so that when you're giving money to this, you come to the ping pong ball, you're giving money to the foundation, it's going directly to parking passes. That's something tangible. That's in your hand as a parent. That's something that you can actually see and get a huge, huge benefit from. It's a really, really cool thing, and I know as somebody who had a child in the NICU what that cost, and so to be able to take that away and ease that financial burden for other families is really, really special.
And if people can't make the event on Thursday night, the ping pong ball at St. Jane Hotel, they can always go to the website jacksonchance.org and donate, of course.
Yeah, absolutely, 100%.
And before you go, I want to ask you about David Ross. How does one manage friends? He was friends with these guys. Now he's managing his friends on the Chicago Cubs.
Yeah, I think that's always, an interesting dynamic, but at the same time, he was doing a really good job of that as a friend. So I actually think it'll be a little bit easier because he was a little bit hard on you sometimes as a teammate because he demanded that you be prepared, be ready, and he didn't let you slide with anything. And whether that was in the moment in the game or, in the locker room or sitting around at dinner at night, always trying to get the best out of you, and I think it won't even be an issue at all whatsoever. I think you'll actually be able to get a little bit more out of these guys as a manager than maybe you did even as a teammate. He was so great at it.
Boy, I hope you're right. And I was thinking about when we had you on during your playing days, you rode your bike to Wrigley Field, and I was thinking about this before the show. That just doesn't happen anymore. That doesn't happen, I think, in Chicago. I know Zobrist used to do it, but I don't think people ride their bike to the ballpark anywhere in the United States.
No, it was definitely it was nice. I always lived close to the park, so to be able to do that. I was just telling the story to some friends the other day. We actually rode our bikes, me, Ted, Lilly, and Coy Hill, down to U.S. Cellular.
You're kidding.
So, rather than sit in traffic on the Edens, we just all right, let's go. And we just popped all the way down to 35th and then just rode our bike up that way to the field. So everybody laughed at us. They're like, you're an idiot. Why would you ride your bike? I'm like, you're going to be in traffic when I'm back at the clubhouse. So who's the idiot now?
When you rode your bike that day to U.S. Cellular to Sox Park, did you pitch that day?
I did not. No, not that
okay.
day.
All right.
Coy Hill did play, and he showed up in some pretty awesome neon green spandex, too. Yeah.
I love it. Demps, you're the best, man. JacksonChance.org. That is JacksonChance.org. Or you can make it this Thursday at the St. Jane Hotel for the ping pong ball. What time does it kick off?
The VIP tournament starts at 4:30, and then the regular tournament starts at 5:30. So a great night. There's going to be some former Chicago athletes around the city, some Chicago Fire cast members. There's going to be some celebrities there you can play against and rub elbows with and go out there and try and take some people down in a great, fun night for a great cause.
And by the way, the Bears are now winning 19-3.
See? Positive energy. We just flow it through the radio waves. Pete, good things happen.
Ryan Dempster. You're the best, Demps. Thanks so much.
Absolutely. Have a great day.
All right. You too. All right. News is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. It's 720 WGN. Pete McMurray in the Skyline Studios. The Bears look like a Super Bowl team right now. Now, I just want everybody to curb their enthusiasm. This is the Lions. They have a horrible team, first of all. Secondly, they're playing with a backup quarterback. I think Matt Patricia, their head coach, gets fired after the season. He doesn't really seem to know what he's doing. Mm. And, Curtis,
yep,
you played the Lions as your defense in fantasy.
I did.
That's why the Bears are winning.
You're welcome.
You know
You're
that,
welcome,
right?
Chicago.
Yeah, there you go. Bears look good. We got the post-game show coming up at 3 o'clock. Camp and OB with Kaz. Thanksgiving is, what, 3 weeks from this weekend? 3 weeks from this past Thursday?
Mm-hmm.
Less than 2.5 weeks away. What do you think is the number two side dish? Number one is stuffing. What do you think number two is?
Mashed potatoes.
Absolutely correct. What comes after mashed potatoes?
Cranberry sauce.
Cranberry sauce is number four. I'm not a big cranberry guy.
I'm not either.
Sweet potatoes in at number three.
Ooh, I love sweet potatoes.
So your top four side dishes, actually your top five. What do you think number five is?
Ooh, rolls, like dinner rolls?
Yes! Wow! You know your Thanksgiving food.
Bam!
So number one side dish for Thanksgiving, stuffing. Number two, mashed potatoes. Number three, sweet potatoes. Number four, cranberry sauce. Number five, you got your rolls. Yeah. I mean, I love mashed potatoes, but I don't like mashed potatoes on Thanksgiving. I like
really?
The turkey and the stuffing, and then you got to just douse it with gravy, everything, because the turkey is always too dry.
Put a little salt on top.
Yeah, that's what you do. Why don't you deep fry your turkey? Because I'm too lazy. I don't do that. And my mother has never deep fried a turkey.
Don't play with fire.
Mm-mm. Instacart did a survey of the Thanksgiving dishes Americans secretly hate. What do you think is number one?
What they secretly hate?
Yes, the side dish that Americans secretly hate. So stuffing number one they love. What is number one that they hate? Side dish.
Maybe some sort of casserole, like broccoli casserole or something like that?
Green bean casserole came in at number two.
I was close.
I love green bean casserole.
I'm not
absolutely love it. What do you mean you don't like green beans? They don't taste like anything.
And that's why. I want a little bit of flavor with it.
Is it the texture you don't like? Are you a mushroom guy? Do you like mushrooms?
I love mushrooms. Sauteed, put a little sauce on them.
So you like mushrooms, don't like green beans?
Grilled mushrooms, yeah.
The number one Thanksgiving dish that Americans secretly hate, canned cranberry sauce. So when you open the cranberry, I don't know what it is,
just
but
the,
you open it and you put it on the plate in the can shape. Why is that? That is just a thing. That's
it's
an
lazy.
Old school thing. No, it's not. It's a thing. My mother, when she does Thanksgiving dinner, she makes cranberries homemade and she puts them in a bowl and then she gets the one out of a can. I'm like, Ma, why do you do this? Oh, we've always done it. I go, well, I don't know if people need two different types of cranberry. Oh, we've always done it. This is just the way it is.
And you always run out of both?
No. It's always left
Which
over.
Which one's more popular?
The homemade.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't really eat cranberries.
I don't like cranberries at all. I avoid
now
it.
Now that I think about it, and they cut it, you know, it's got the shape of the can, and you cut it where
edges.
The grooves are.
Yeah.
Yes, it's very strange. But I never put it on my plate. I don't know if I've eaten cranberries in the last 20 years. I remember trying it as a young kid, but it's just not even on my radar. Not at all. Let's see. Thanksgiving dishes Americans secretly hate. Side dishes. Cranberries in a can, number one. Green bean casserole at number two. Sweet potatoes at number three. I don't understand the sweet potato. I don't get it. Is it candy? Is it a potato? I don't like the sweet and the potato together. It's just, I can't stand it. Don't like it. Are you a sweet potato guy?
I am a sweet potato guy.
You like sweet potato fries?
Oh, yeah.
Don't get it.
A little ketchup, a little salt.
Mm, don't get it. Pumpkin pie came in at number four.
Really?
Yes. and then dressing at number five. How do you not like dressing?
Maybe if there's like a salad or something? I don't know.
No, I mean the stuffing, the dressing.
Oh, God.
I love the stuffing. Absolutely love it. Wow. Thanksgiving dinner. There's nothing better. Hanging out with your family, arguing about politics and religion, then sitting down and everybody having a nice treat. That's good stuff right there. What is your favorite side dish? 312-981-7200 is our phone number, 630 area code. Cranberries are the worst. Thank you, Dino. I don't know. I think I need to try them this year. I can't remember the actual taste of the cranberries. It's been so long. I mean, what do you eat cranberries with? Besides turkey. You're not eating it on its own, right?
No, you don't put it on like a dessert or anything.
The dried cranberries in the bag, I've had those. Whatever. I don't know. It's just doesn't really interest me. But I love the pumpkin pie.
I do
absolutely
too.
Love it.
My mom makes a really great homemade pecan pie. That's always popular.
Love pecan pie. But the pumpkin pie. And I want you, everybody, to pay attention. I say this every year, and I love talking about it because I go out and I buy five of them. The Costco pumpkin pie, the size of the rim of your tire on your car, is the best pumpkin pie on the planet.
Costco has a lot of things done right.
Costco sells millions of pumpkin pies every year, and the recipe hasn't changed since 1987. The company sold 5.3 million pies last year. Those pies required 3.4 million pumpkins to make. And keep in mind that Costco only offers up the pies from September through December. So they're selling 5.3 million September, October, November, December in 4 months.
They're so popular because of the size, because they're so big. Like normally, like if you make a homemade pumpkin pie, they're usually a little bit smaller.
And so I know, but have you had it?
I have had the Costco pumpkin pie. It's great.
It's
great. Don't get me wrong. But I think another reason why it'd be because of the size. It's great tasting, and it's so big that you don't have to go through the hassle of maybe not having enough pumpkin pie.
So why would you make your own pumpkin pie if you
Some
have a huge
like
pie?
Stuff.
I know, but you have a huge pie, and it tastes fantastic. Why would you even waste your time? Oh, it's an old family recipe. Just got to do it every year. It's tradition. Come on. Really? Do you need to do that? Mm-hmm. Keep in mind that Costco only offers up the pies from September through December. For 4 months, they sell 5.3 million pies. A total of 1.75 million of these pumpkin pies were purchased the 3 days running up to Thanksgiving. So that Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, 1.75 million pumpkin pies out of the 5.3 million in those 4 months are sold in 3 days. Costco, the day before, the 2 days before Thanksgiving on Tuesday and Wednesday are the worst times to go. Absolute worst. It's terrible. I do it every year.
It's a madhouse.
I have to get the pumpkin pies and take them to my mom's house.
The Black Friday of grocery shopping.
You know what I did last year? I had to get there on Wednesday because we were driving to Peoria. You know, it's the busiest travel day of the year and you want to hurry up and get on the road. Because my mother lives in Peoria. So I got to Costco. They open at 10. I got there at 9:30. There was a line. I had to get in line. So once you get in line and they open the doors at 10, you have your cart. You got your cart out and
it's
you
like
just
the running
run.
Of a bulls.
You just run. You grab those pies, you grab water, and you get out of there.
Yeah.
You always have to grab water. Always. But yeah, pumpkin pies. I absolutely love it. Making those 5.3 million pies requires 1.1 million gallon cans of pureed pumpkins. 3.4 million pumpkins. That's just crazy. I love it. Love everything about Thanksgiving. You have a Thanksgiving tradition? What do you do on Thanksgiving night?
You know what? Thanksgiving has always kind of varied. Christmas is more of the traditional time for our family. We usually host Christmas, and we have about, you know, 20-ish people, 25-ish people at our house for Christmas. Thanksgiving, it's usually more low-key. It's usually my family of four, plus grandma, grandpa, and my uncle. So it's just about six or seven of us.
See, it's just the opposite for us. My mother hosts Thanksgiving, and it's huge. So our family goes down there, and everybody, you know, you eat at 2 in the afternoon, and that's it. You kind of graze for the rest of the day.
Yeah.
So you sit down, you pray, everybody makes their toasts, you go around the table, You make fun of some people. You start watching football. You fall asleep. You wake up. And then what do you do? Do you go see a movie? Do you go bowling? Or do you go gambling? Those are the big three. What do you do?
I don't know. Personally, I probably would go bowling.
Bowling?
Yeah.
We've done all of it, but we usually go, we call it the floating ATM in Peoria, the Paradise Riverboat Casino. So we go gamble.
Nice.
Yeah, it's nice. Floating ATM.
Yeah.
It's good stuff. All right, quick break. Bottom of the hour, John Popper from Blues Traveler is coming to town with his band on Thursday at the Vic Theater. We'll talk to John after bottom of the hour. And up next, there is the man that is here that donated a 55-foot spruce Christmas tree. We'll bring him in studio next on 720 WGN. It is Pete McMurray in the Skyline Studios. The 106th Christmas tree has been donated by the Gene Nelson family. The Nelson's tree was selected from more than 40 submissions, and Gene and his family will join Santa and other guests to light the tree at the 106th annual Christmas tree lighting ceremony on Friday, November 22nd in Millennium Park. And Gene Nelson is here. Congratulations, first of all.
Thanks.
You had a 55-foot tree in your front yard.
Yes, we did, and that's why we did, is the past.
When was this thing planted?
We found out it was about 46 years ago.
Okay.
Before our subdivision was built.
All right.
So what had happened is it had started growing towards the foundation, and if it's uprooting my concrete, the little landscape wall, and what you don't see underneath the ground is worse than what you see on top.
So really?
We just decided it was best to, you know, it was time to go.
So you couldn't wait to get rid of this thing.
Well, yeah, but it's expensive.
Yes.
And, you know, and finding someone who can come and take down a 55-foot spruce is...
Oh, my gosh, are you smart. You are smart. The city of Chicago paid for this, didn't they?
Yes.
Gene, I love this. I love everything about this. So you have a 55-foot spruce in your front yard, and the roots are popping everything up, and you're thinking, oh, my gosh, it's going to hit something in my house, so I got to get rid of this thing. So when did you hear about the Christmas tree contest here in Chicago?
Well, we heard about it about 4 or 5 years ago. Another tree from Elgin had won the contest.
That's right. I had that family on the air.
And so we said to ourselves, that would be the thing to do. And we waited a year or so because we said, what are the odds on another Elgin tree getting picked? So we waited, and it was 2017.
Okay.
Took a few photographs and sent it to the city of Chicago, and we were a runner-up.
Oh, that's rough stuff.
Yeah. It was too short. So
it was too short.
Yes.
So 2 years ago, how tall was it?
It was just a few feet short.
Okay.
2 years ago, but now it's not.
So you're thinking, okay, I got to get some fertilizer, maybe put some Sprite underneath the tree.
Yeah, Miracle-Gro,
whatever it takes. I need that extra 2 feet.
Yeah, we were hoping upon hope for good weather for the tree, and with luck, it did happen. So, I entered the contest.
Well, tell me the qualifications, first of all.
It has to be a spruce tree of some type, or there's one other type, and I'm not sure what it was. It has to be a spruce-type tree.
Okay.
And it has to be 55 feet. And I think they also would like to be able to get to it.
Okay, yes.
So
it's got to be accessible.
Yes, and the nice thing about ours, they really liked it, so it was really accessible. It wasn't in our backyard. It was right out front there on the street. So... like I said, it was a landmark for us. We would tell people, because it's a suburban house, we have a house right next to us that looks exactly like ours, and we'd say, stop at the spruce, and they would.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're probably just going to drive by and keep going, and you know, because all the houses are suburbia.
Right.
The same.
They're just going to keep going.
Yeah.
So you submit the tree to the city of Chicago. You get chosen, and it's like, oh my gosh, they're going to cut down the tree. Did you have second thoughts?
No, not really. Once I found out
that they were going to pay for it and get it out of my front yard, I'm good with it.
I asked it right away because once they cut down the trees, one thing, but then you have to get a, you know, you have to get out there and dig the roots out,
right?
And you have to re-landscape.
Did we do that too?
They do that.
Wow. You know, I'm paying for that. I live in the city. So you need to thank me.
You know what? I don't know if you are paying for it. From what I understand, the city of Chicago doesn't pay too much for it, or if anything for it.
I didn't know that. Wow.
I think they said like the Brotherhood of Electrical Workers and other people help finance this. And don't hold me to that, but that's what I heard from Neil.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
So they come out to your house. Are you worried that when they cut down the tree, it may fall the other way and hit your house?
Oh, absolutely not, because they told me how they did it. And once what they do is they have about 5 or 6 guys come out to the tree.
Okay.
And they climb the tree and start wrapping the branches up, almost like bundling it up like you'd buy a Christmas tree at, say, bundled up at, like, Menards or Home Depot.
Wow.
They tie the branches up.
Okay.
Go to a lower branch.
Yep.
Tie the branches up again. And they keep on going until they get down to the lower part of the tree, and they're done. And then, once it's all tied up, they cut out a little bit below that. And then the crane comes in the next day when they're done.
Yep.
And they have some chain wrapped up around the tree. The crane comes down, lowers to the chain they have. They pull up a little bit on the crane.
Right.
And then they chainsaw the bottom, and the crane holds the tree up.
Oh, my gosh.
And then they have about the 6 guys are on the side with guy ropes pulling it with a crane towards the flatbed.
Wow.
It was amazing to watch.
I mean, this is an operation.
Yes, but it went so smoothly. I was really impressed.
I thought they'd just show up with a pickup truck and just cut it down and drive away.
That would have been something in itself. But, yeah, we were really impressed by how smoothly it went.
Wow. Gene Nelson and his family. You brought your family today.
Yes, I did.
They're going to be at the tree lighting ceremony. You're going to see your beautiful tree on display downtown in Millennium Park. That's pretty impressive.
Yes, that was one of the best things we can think of, because you know from being down here how many people walk down Michigan Avenue.
Right.
And that's just during a regular day,
yeah,
let alone the holidays. So our tree is going to be out there for everyone to see. Thousands and thousands of people will walk by, and we'll get to walk by it and say, you know, we help make this, you know, holiday season great.
Right. And there's nothing better than Christmas here in Chicago. The lights, the way they decorate downtown is just fantastic.
Yes, exactly. And we're now part of that, and a little bit part of like one of the years of history here. So, you know.
So do you get grandfathered in? Do you get to come down every single year to the event? I can negotiate that for you. Yeah, I know Mary May from
you
the city.
You could try.
I got people.
I don't want to get arrested for stalking or anything like that. But yeah, it would be great to come down. But it's really interesting to see how they did it. And we're just proud that, you know, we can do that, you know, this year.
Right. Well, Gene, congratulations. You want to say hi to who did you bring? Can you introduce him real quick? I got to hit commercials.
Oh, sure. That's my wife, Connie, and my daughter, Shelley.
I love it. Connie and Shelley, thanks for coming down. Congratulations. I hope to be at the ceremony.
Thank you very much.
On Friday, November 22nd, right downtown at 6 o'clock.
Yes.
Gene Nelson, the entire family donated the tree. You'll see it on display as you drive past Millennium Park. Okay. Thank you, Gene.
Thank you very much.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you.
It's 720 WGN. 720 WGN, Pete McMurray in the Skyline Studios. Blues Traveler will be in town Thursday at the Vic Theater. For tickets, go to jamusa.com. He is the lead singer, lead harmonica player, and lead hat wearer of Blues Traveler. We'd like to welcome back to the show. It is John Popper. How are you, brother?
Hey, man. Good to see you, Pete.
You know, Vic.
Or hear you.
Yes. The Vic Theater. I saw you guys. I had to look this up in March of 95 at the Vic Theater. You've come full circle.
Yeah, we've been playing there for a long time.
Yeah.
We've been playing for a long time. It's bizarre. Doing this album and seeing that like a quarter century's gone by since we put this thing out, you know, it sneaks up on you. You turn your back, and before you know it, that's been out for 25 years. Jesus.
John, you did your 30th anniversary tour, and I said, no way, it's been 30 years. And then I'm looking back. I saw you 20 years ago at the Vic.
Yeah, I know. What's really satisfying is that everybody's coming out to see it, and they seem to like the stuff.
Well, that's a good thing. You know, that corner has changed, by the way, by the Vic. My shoe cobbler is gone, and Walgreens has moved in.
Oh, Derek, you know, you should take your shoes into Walgreens and demand that they fix them.
Everybody needs a good cobbler, John, don't you think?
Yes. A fine cobbler is a great thing to do, and also delicious, depending on which cobbler you're referring
to. You're 30, what is it? It's been 32 years, right, with Blues Traveler?
Yeah, it's nuts, since 87.
I mean,
and we put four out in 94.
Wow. I mean, tell me that moment when you knew, John, when you knew that, wow, this is it. I finally made it.
Well, really, there's a lot of levels, because your parents are sort of like a big judge of whether or not you made it or whether or not you're kidding yourself. And when you get like a gold record, you can like show them, see, it's something official.
Mm-hmm.
So that certainly helped. But I think for us, the moment was when we were in Atlanta opening for Hootie and the Blowfish. And we're playing our normal stuff, and people are liking it. And then we did Run Around, and then suddenly everybody went crazy. It's like a Beatle concert. and we knew at that point, that was like, I want to say December of 94, we knew that something was weird, something that hadn't happened to us before was happening.
Well, when that song came out, it was bigger than life.
For us, it was our life. So it's really hard to know the difference between something big or something usual. Like, you know, that's what amazes me, is like how many amazing things have happened in my life that I just kind of counted on as, oh, those are normal. That's what always happens. It's a weird thing.
Well, you talk about your parents, you know, your parents are kind of a judge when you make it big. How about when you told your parents, this is going to be my career after I leave school?
Well, that was the thing, is, you know, our parents, for each of us, put down this choice of, like, you can either get a job or we'll pay for school. So we all said, yeah, school, and then we would skip school and then figure out how to play in a band.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, for those of you who have kids out there, they're doing this to you right now, I promise. And then there was this moment where we were paying our rent, playing gigs, so we went to our parents and said, thanks for the money, we're quitting school. And, you know, they freaked out, and my parents called the school, and it was a music school, and I think the music school said, is he learning more out there or in here? And, you know, this is what he's going to school to learn how to do. So, you know, it was kind of like, that's the point of why we're going to school. And they, you know, they said the thing that they couldn't argue with is I told them I have to at least try,
right,
and find out. And, you know, you can't really argue that. And, Taz, who's our bass player now, he said he was going to do a band in New York City, and I remember thinking he was nuts. You know, Chan's little brother, we see him going into New York City to start a band, and I thought that was a really insane idea.
Right.
But when we did it, it was okay. You know? So it's sort of like when it's happening to you, it seems like just the perfect, successful right. idea. But if you try to tell anyone about your idea of trying to make it in a band, it always sounds like a ludicrous dream.
We're talking with John Popper. That is so true. Blues Traveler in town at the Vic Theater this coming Thursday. Have you ever had a moment over the years where you met somebody like a Mick Jagger or Robert Plant where you were just at a loss for words?
Yes, many times. Constantly. Even now, you know, like I don't feel like I deserve to meet him now. You know, like, who am I? And, you know, I get sort of like Chris Farley in that skit, like, do you remember that movie where you shot the ghost with the laser?
Yes.
That was cool.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's why you're so likable, is because you're a normal guy and you do geek out when you see these celebrities. Sometimes you get these guys that are in rock bands that are too cool for school.
Well, you know, and the thing is, they're scared, too. They just got a better veneer. You know, like, you know, I wish I could sort of pony that up. I've watched too much television to really not be affected.
You're an avid gun collector. Is it true you have a cannon in your front yard?
Yes, I do. And, you know, where I used to live, I had a range. Like, it's a rough bore, so you can't shoot cannonballs, because that was just so much more money. I just felt like I didn't really need to, like, blow anything up far away.
But uh-huh.
You do get a local, you know, you get a lot of say in the local PTA when you have artillery.
Yeah.
This one shoots dog food cans 1,000 yards, but right now it's just sort of aimed across the street at my neighbor's house.
Nice.
And I haven't heard a peep out of it, but we get along fine.
That's very nice. Where does one buy a cannon?
Tennessee.
Really?
You can send away for one. Yep.
You got a guy. I like that.
Yeah, there's a Canon guy. And, you know, I took it out to Seattle where I live now, and all the water made the, you know, the wooden carriage, it just sort of like rotted away. So eventually it was just this sort of metal tube in my yard.
Okay.
But there is a Canon repair guy in Montana.
Really?
Who came out, and he'll replace your wooden carriage with a aluminum one.
Interesting.
So it's waterproof now.
Well, I don't understand how you find the Canon guy. Did you just Google it? Canon repair guy?
I guess now you can. I mean, this was a little before that was a popular thing to do, but you had to look around.
Okay.
But you can find a Canon guy. Online, I'm sure you can get even more of them. Well, I'll bet you it's probably flourished.
Well, that's the thing about Chicago. Everybody's got a guy. Somebody listening right now to this, they have a Canon guy. And they're right. Like, oh, I could have helped pop her out.
Yeah, what you need is a good Gatling gun. You know, like, I was thinking about getting a Gatling gun, but again, the expenditure in ammo just to go and have, like, a fun afternoon, like, that's a lot of money.
It's rough stuff.
It's pricey.
But I have to tell you, before you go, one of my favorite moments on this show is when you pulled out your harmonica and played the Roseanne theme.
Oh, yeah.
And
I wish I had my harp on me.
Oh,
they'd take them away from me.
Oh, shit.
I know.
You don't have one with you right now? You're not wearing the vest? I feel like you're Superman.
I'm lying nude in my bed right now,
wow,
just waking up to a wonderful day.
This is uncomfortable.
Here in Iowa.
Wow, this is uncomfortable.
Yeah, well,
this really got uncomfortable.
What are you wearing? I assumed everyone's nude.
I'm wearing jeans.
This time of day, isn't everybody in bed?
No, not really. It's midday, so everybody's up and around. John Popper, you're the absolute best.
Wait, there's an early in the day? What is that for?
Thursday, Vic Theater. Go to jamusa.com for tickets. Blues Traveler, John Popper, you're the best, man. Have a great day. Thank you so much, and we'll see
you
Thursday.
You rock, and we'll kill it, man. We'll see you there.
All right, take care. Thanks again to John Popper. Didn't really need the visual at the end when he said he was naked. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't that be great to be a rock star? You could just lay in bed all day, and you work for a few hours at night, play
make
music.
Make all that money.
Make a lot of money. Yeah. But, man, I can't believe it. 32 years they've been around. I still remember that show at the Vic. They were so good in concert. He's such a likable guy on stage. He is. Have you ever seen Blues Traveler?
I have not.
He wears a vest with like 30 harmonicas in it. So imagine a fishing vest made with 30 harmonicas, or he calls them harps. And he just pulls them out at different times.
Just randomly. I'll use this one.
Yeah, because there's different pitches in a song, so he'll pull one out and put it back in. So Blues Traveler, Thursday at the Vic, jamusa.com for tickets. I forgot to mention this when we were talking about Costco pumpkin pies. Costco just launched bottles of eggnog wine for the holidays.
Eggnog wine.
Eggnog wine. The Kirkland eggnog wine cocktail bottle looks like an instant holiday treat. It's a huge Kirkland white bottle, and it sells for $8.99. 1.5 liters of Kirkland eggnog wine cocktails.
I'm a big fan of Oberweiss eggnog.
Oberweiss eggnog, okay.
Yeah.
Does it have booze in it?
Well, I mean, you can get creative.
I know, but this already comes together. This is all in one thing for $8.99, man. 13.9% alcohol in the entire bottle. I mean, that's not the alcohol. I mean, that's all the alcohol in the bottle.
Yeah.
But you do get booze with it. I like it. It's fantastic. This year, the new trend, according to Wayfair, they've noticed their search volume for pink Christmas trees. There's been a 125% increase at Wayfair.com searching for pink Christmas trees compared to last year.
Huh.
The rise has been so significant that Wayfair.com has curated a page of ornaments and other decor for colors to go with the tree.
Are they trying to go like Charlie Brown Christmas style?
They're doing, no. It's a huge pink. Just imagine a regular Christmas tree, and it's pink. And let's see. The other ornaments, they have black matte balls and glittery turquoise ribbons to go with the tree. That is Wayfair.com. Pink Christmas trees. If you're one of those people, we were talking about Thanksgiving. What are you going to do on Thanksgiving night? Are you going to go bowling? You're going to see a movie? You're going to go to the gambling boat? A lot of people like to run out and go shopping, and Target just announced that they will start Black Friday on Thanksgiving Day. So Thanksgiving night, people usually eat 12, 1, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, watch a little football, and then what do you do? Well, Target announced that they are opening on Thanksgiving Day for the second year in a row. They will open at 5 in the afternoon, and they'll close at 1 in the morning. Then they'll reopen on Black Friday at 7 a.m. Boy, that's a quick turnaround right there. I feel bad for those Target workers. Yeah. Wow, that's rough stuff. Bed Bath & Beyond will be open for the first time on Thanksgiving evening this year from 5 until 12. Stores that won't be open, Costco, they're never open on Thanksgiving. Lowe's will not be open. Sam's Club will not be open on Thanksgiving Day. This is good. I think there's something odd about shopping on Thanksgiving. You're saying, Pete, well, there's something weird about going to a gambling boat on Thanksgiving. I don't think so. But shopping on Thanksgiving night, Ace Hardware closed, Hobby Lobby closed, Home Goods, Lowe's, Marshall's, Petco, Sam's Club, TJ Maxx, and True Value all closed this year on Thanksgiving.
Good.
Most will open on Black Friday at 7 a.m., 6 a.m., or 5 a.m.
I think my sister has to work. She works at Target. I think she is going to be working on Thanksgiving.
Right. Just mentioned that. Yeah, Target's going to open at 5 o'clock.
And then they close at 10, and then they reopen.
This says 1 a.m. They're open from 5 to 1.
Her store is closing, I think, at about 10 o'clock, because then they're getting prepped up for like displays and stuff for Black Friday, and then they open up.
At 7 a.m. on Friday.
I think at, whatever time the next day.
That's painful. Which Target?
The Super Target in Lake in the Hills.
Oh, yeah. It's nice.
Mm-hmm.
Love the Super Target. You can do produce.
Yeah, everything.
You can do produce. You can hang out. Why don't they put a bar in Target? I'm serious. Because you'll go to Whole Foods now. They have a bar in the middle of the store.
Kind of like when you went to Barnes & Noble, there was a Starbucks in there.
Right. But Whole Foods, they have bars. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, grocery stores in the city do not have bars. I go to Peoria. There's a bar. And I'm talking a full bar in every grocery store where guys hang out and watch TV and drink beer.
While their wives go shopping.
Yes. Or they just show up. I'm going to the grocery store, hon. And then hang out at the bar. Genius. Absolutely genius. I guess Mariano's on Ashland near Armitage has a bar in the middle of the store. So you can grab a cocktail and walk around. It's nice. That's super Whole Foods. That store at Belmont and... What is that? Belmont and Ashland, right on the corner?
Yeah.
That's got a bar, too. But I always feel like an outsider at Whole Foods, like I don't belong.
Why is that?
At me, it's like, that guy doesn't recycle. I do. I do recycle.
Why do you feel like an outsider?
I don't know. I just feel like people know that I'm very loyal to Jewel. And Whole Foods, a little pricey. You know what
I'm
saying?
Up in a black hoodie and black clothing, concealing your identity.
I love it. We have a dog, and we do not take our dog to go take a picture with Santa. But if you're one of those people that like to take your dog or cat to take a picture with Santa this year, here are the list of stores where you can take your dog or cat to get a picture with Santa. You can go to PetSmart, of course. You can go to Gurney Mills, the mall.
Mm-hmm.
Gurney Mill Mall, Petco, and Cabela's. Also, Nick's Cove. I'm not familiar with that, but Petco and Cabela's. I don't need a picture of Santa Claus with my pooch. I don't think so. Come to think of it, don't think our dog made our family picture last year.
I can see that if, for example, my aunt and uncle, they have two pugs. If they send out Christmas cards and they're all about their dogs, have them get a picture with Santa, that sort of thing is fine.
Okay, now you're making me feel bad. I get it. I completely get it. If I didn't have a 14-year-old in high school, maybe we do send out a picture of us with the pooch.
Why not?
I don't think Wrigley made the cut last year, now that I think about it. On the Christmas card, I think we were all downtown. And we just snapped a picture.
Wow. This is good enough.
This is exactly what happens at the McMurray house. We have our Christmas card. We take a picture. My wife gets them done early because she's so type A. And she's like, okay, I'm going to send them out to my family, and you send yours to your family. I never send them out. I hate doing Christmas cards. I hate filling out cards. And well, then
especially
I feel
for
like,
you, because you have such a big family.
Well, I feel like I got to write a note. I just can't put the picture
you feel
in
like you
the
have
envelope.
To personalize it a little
right?
Bit. Yeah.
Hey, Merry Christmas. Love the McMurrays, Chicago McMurrays. Yeah, I don't know. Is that bad? And the next thing you know, I talk myself out of it. I don't really want to do it.
At least you've sent Christmas cards. We've been so wrapped up in the holidays the last few years that we've haven't sent out a Christmas card in probably 4 or 5 years.
Really?
Yeah.
You got to get on that.
I know.
870 area code. There was a grocery store in Poplar Bluff, Missouri, that had a live country band not long ago. God, that would be great. Honey, I'm going to go to the grocery store and there's a live band. God, that's...
Yeah, Toby Keith is there. I'm going to...
That's fantastic.
He was actually playing the guitar in the produce aisle.
Best Buy has their Black Friday items on their website. Saturday, we purchased an HP all-in-one printer for $29. That's great. All right. Thanks for hanging out today. And if you missed Eddie Johnson, we put it online at WGNradio.com. It's also on my Facebook page. Got the post-game show coming up next right after news from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom at 720 WGN.